Monster Man, episode 420, Horse and Human.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are taking a look at two more monsters from Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Just as a reminder, this is an early example. I was going to say the first, but maybe that's not true. I don't know. Anyway, this is an advanced recorded episode. I recorded this a good deal of time before it came out, so if you have recently subscribed to the Patreon, you will receive your acknowledgement in an episode recorded closer to the time you did that, even if not released closer. Make sense? I hope so. Anyway, today our monsters, I mean, it feels like a stretch to call them monsters, they're the horse and the human. We'll start with the horse. So it's horses. There's nothing wrong with it. It's 2 pages long and you get 8 different kinds of horses. You got your draft horse, heavy horse, medium horse, light horse, pony, wild horse, riding horse, and mule. I will accept that mules are not technically a kind of horse, but whatever. There are few things for me to complain about in this entry, but also few things to praise. It is horses. You're going to have horses in your game. It's a medieval-inspired fantasy world, so people will travel around on horses. And it's nice to know that there are stats of horses. And people like horses. You know, horses are fun. You can kind of characterize them. I think people like their steed having a little bit of a personality to them, or like the dwarf being grumpy because, you know, they don't like riding horses and their feet don't reach the stirrups or whatever. There's nothing wrong with adding a little extra detail and flavor to the horses in your game, and 2 pages is a pretty good amount of space to do that in. However, I want to go ahead and suggest that maybe they didn't even really need all 2 pages. There's quite a lot of information in the section, and some of it is just like the author really clearly loves step ponies and feels that the way that people kind of look down on them is unjust. I'm not aware that people do look down on them, but you know what I mean, that sort of like our stereotype of a medieval warhorse is quite a large animal and not a little robust mount capable of long journeys and surprising speed. And people in general, I feel, have an exaggerated idea of how big medieval warhorses were generally. Tim Severin, it seems like a thing Tim Severin would do, did one of those books where he like traveled from, you know, France to Jerusalem, like following the route of the First Crusade, but riding like a gigantic, you know, like a draft horse. And, you know, medieval war horses in the later medieval period could get pretty big, but you should think of them as like a hunter. They're not small, but they're not enormous brutes. You know, they're all rounders that need to combine strength, stamina, and speed. Anyway, whatever. People are like, oh, they weren't enormous tanks and they weren't so physically imposing. But that's because people are kind of forgetting. Like, if you get kicked by a medium to large horse, you're not going to be like, oh, psh, it's not the biggest horse available. It's going to hurt. Anyway, none of that matters. The point is that there are some things here that are useful. So, for example, we get a definition of hands. All my life, I have been seeing horses described as so-and-so many hands high. And I think I had a pretty reasonable guess, you know, that it's roughly the width of your hand. But people's hands are different widths, and here it says that a hand is about 4 inches, which would be about 10 centimeters for my metric listeners. That seems about right. Okay, that's useful. But there are some entries that are less useful, and here we come to some of the characteristic overwriting, not only of this book, but of other books released during this period and well into the 21st century. I'm sure I've quoted something almost like this from a New World of Darkness book at an earlier point in this podcast. Let me give you a quote from the horse section. Horses are large quadrupeds often used for transportation or as pack and draft animals by human and demi-human races. They are frequently bred for their speed and for their beauty. Oh, is that what a horse is? I've always wondered. For the love, I mean, seriously, this is what happens when you start to think primarily in terms of like entry formatting, and you put that format requirement above the needs of the reader. But like, there's lots of other, there's a sort of pulp sci-fi game where you play detectives in a kind of film noir-y. It seems like it should be Mutant City Blues, but it's not. I forget what it's called. I don't think it's still around, but this was some years ago. And it has this entry that says, you know, there'll be like an NPC set of stats, and it'll say, bartender. Bartenders serve drinks in bars and nightclubs. Oh, is that what a bartender does? Or like, detective. You know, detectives can work for police departments, or they can be private investigators. Really? And I feel like this is a result of a system where, after bartender is going to come Blackthorn Assassin, and you have to write, like, Blackthorn Assassins are the elite killers of the Blackthorn Society, trained in the monastery of the blah 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 by the ancient master so-and-so. And therefore, there's gotta be a couple of descriptive lines after the heading in every NPC entry, regardless of whether it's needed or not, or else it just looks weird. For real, though, there is no person in the world who picks up this book who needs to be told what a horse is. I mean, again, it's a minor point to, like, get so exercised about, and I should stop, but my point is that it represents a triumph of format and, like, structure over thinking about how a human person is going to use this book. Speaking of human persons, that's what our next entry is about. Humans! Now, you may remember that back in the first edition Monster Manual, and if you've been with this show since then, thank you very much. And if you've listened to those old episodes recently, I'm sorry, I've grown as a person. You may remember that this entry was originally much later in the book because it was called Men. So, nice to see that we've been adopting more inclusive language. That's nice. It is a little bit of a shame, though, because it has deprived me of the opportunity to sing the Men song, which was the musical hit of season one. Regardless, we are here given 24 kinds of humans spread over 4 pages with 4 illustrations. The illustrations struggle a little bit with the fact that the frame ratio of the illustration boxes, which are all the same size throughout the book, doesn't really work well for a human-sized being standing upright. If you were to draw a human-sized being standing upright, you would wind up with a lot of, like, wasted white space on the left and right sides of the image, because the image is, it's not quite square, but it's much squarer than a person is. And so all the people are in, like, crouched stances, with the caveman, his knees are so flexed. He's doing some kind of exercise. He could touch the ground without bending his waist, almost. And his head's at a weird angle. They're funny looking images. There's nothing wrong with them. Like, clearly they've just been, like, I'm sure this person was told, you know, the images have to have this ratio. But the result is that, I mean, not quite. The barbarian is actually stepping outside, or the berserker is actually stepping outside of his frame, which is a nice little bit. But for the most part, I don't know, the poses are odd, and I think it's because they have to fit in these odd-shaped frames. Anyway, the 24 types of people are aborigines or cavemen, oof, adventurers, bandits or brigands, barbarians or nomads, berserkers or dervishes, farmers or herders, gentry, knight, mercenaries, merchant sailors or fishermen, merchants or traders, middle class. What are middle class people? Like, are merchants not middle class? Regardless. Peasants or serfs. I mean, obviously some, like, artisans are middle class as well. You know what I mean, though. Pilgrims, pirates or buccaneers, police or constables, priests, sailors, slavers, soldiers, thieves or thugs, tradesmen or craftsmen. Okay. So who's the middle class? Is it lawyers? Because it's not merchants or tradesmen, tribesmen, and wizards. And, like, there are some fun little details throughout this, like 5% of encounters with knights are with vanquished knights who've, like, lost their horses and stuff and are looking for revenge on the, you know, the people that jousted with them and overthrew them. That's pretty fun. And 25% of the time that you encounter constables in certain environments, they're going to be accompanied by a mob. That's fun too, right? Like, you're just wandering around and then, you know, you're on your way to some quest and then a constable backed by a mob of torch wielding villagers comes through, you know, looking for the person that stole the horses or whatever, and all of a sudden a bunch of, you know, scruffy looking outsiders are right there. That's a fun idea. So this entry is fine. The illustrations have kind of like the weird crouching thing, but they're not bad. They're fine. They're sort of nice, dynamic, colorful illustrations of a variety of different types of humans that you might meet, you know, all kind of ready for combat in some way, of course, but whatever. They're very stereotypical, kind of like berserker in like a fur loincloth and a cloak with a big mustache and like long pigtails and a fully horned helmet and an axe. A pirate who's wearing, you know what she's like. She's got big gold hoop earrings and like a red headscarf and like a little, you know, one of those little waistcoats and a sort of a low cut peasant top and a cutlass and a dagger, you know, and the boots that fold over at the top. There's nothing in it that isn't exactly what you would expect to see, but it's not bad. She's not white. That's kind of cool, I guess. Like, the illustrations are sort of diverse. Okay, diverse, trading on ethnic stereotypes, but at least they're not all Europeans. You know, like, it's fine. It's like all the stats for a variety of different kinds of humans are all together in one place with like little notes that maybe suggest fun encounters with them. You know, it's pretty good. And honestly, a random encounter with a bunch of NPC pilgrims or buccaneers who just happen to be on their way to the same place as you could be a lot of fun. So humans, I mean, they're kind of like humans in D&D generally, you know. Maybe nothing special, nothing wrong with them. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for this week in our next episode. Now, my recording schedule is all messed up, so I'm not exactly sure when this is coming out. So in our next episode, we're probably, but don't hold me to this, going to be returning to Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, and we're going to take a look at the Hydra and the Imp. So please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.